Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, April the 19th, 2021. This is Air Force veteran David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thank you all for joining us this evening. We've got a great show for you tonight with lots of news and information of interest to veterans and their families. But to get things rolling, let's first go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard. How you doing?
Oh, good, David. Hope everybody's doing well out there. Do have a good show for you tonight. I've been super busy lately representing many veterans whose disability compensation cases are on appeal before the Board of Veteran Appeals. And I had one today. I have three on Wednesday and two more on Thursday. It's averaging about six a week these days, and which is a good thing. We can talk more about that during the show. You know, the COVID pandemic and social distancing has resulted in the use of virtual hearings where the veterans and their representatives come to the office. But sometimes they don't come to the office. So today, for instance, my client was working from his office in Ocala. I was in my office, and the judge was in D.C. Last Friday, I had one where the veteran was in Jacksonville, and again, I was in my office, and the judge is in D.C. Or they do come to your office. I prefer to have them come to the office, but it's just amazing with this technology, and sometimes there's a little glitch here and there, but everyone's a little patient, and they've got a great team of people up there in D.C. to handle some of these glitches. I had a judge on Friday, David, Judge John Francis, another Jesuit boy, and we had a chance to talk, you know, kind of quote unquote off the air because we were waiting for my client to get on. He said that they're hiring some more BVA judges. They're going to be up to about 100 now, and they have about 900 lawyers assisting these 100 BVA judges.
So that's probably who they pull. You know, probably most of their judges from that pool of staff attorneys that, you know, they're like law clerks, and they handle the cases, as a law clerk would do.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you research some of these judges, you'll see that they kind of go through this system and then eventually end up becoming a veterans law judge. But for the most part. And judge, you just had a hearing yourself. And for the most part, I find these judges to be very helpful in exploring all the issues and trying to do the best they can to help the veteran. You know, sometimes there are hurdles that you still have to overcome, even when you get to the BVA, despite what the VA has done along the way. Sometimes it's just, it's almost too big of a hurdle. But for the most part, you know, they're out there trying to help the veterans. And, one of the things that I found that's very, that people should realize, veterans, if you're out there and you've got cases before the BVA and you're in the AMA, you have 90 days from the date of the hearing to add additional evidence. And what that means is that even if your lawyer or your representative has filed things along the way, for instance, let's say a PTSD DBQ, a disability benefit questionnaire, and he filed that 6 months ago, which would have been the proper thing to do, he still has to file that PTSD DBQ again. The judge won't consider anything from the date of the hearing going backwards. But you can take all that evidence that you previously submitted and load it up either, you know, have it as a package and send it in the day of the hearing, or take the 90 days and add to it. So there's a benefit there. You know, it's a little more time, yeah, but if you're prepared and you're doing the right thing, I think ultimately it's a good thing for the case. So you got to be aware of that 90 days. You can also waive that 90 days, and I did that today. I had a hearing, and the veteran, it was a migraine case, and I've got the DVQ from the that I previously filed with the VA, but I made it part of my legal memorandum in addition to the statements from my client. So that's all we needed, the DVQ, his statements, and I went ahead and attached it to my legal memorandum, and in my cover letter, I waive the 90 days so that the judge can start processing the case as soon as he can. You know, I don't expect them to get my facts or the letter and go, oh, okay, we're gonna work on this right away. But at least you know that it's going to be in process. So there's a lot of little things. They're not big things, but there are a lot of little technical things that you do have to be aware of when you get to the BVA. But for the most part, I welcome it. I think their decisions are good. I think, David, you tend to agree with me.
Yeah.
They thoroughly vet these cases. They're thoroughly, I think, you know, for the most part, trying to help the veteran. And, you know, the benefit of the doubt rule applies. You know, David, you and I sometimes get really frustrated with the VA when we think that sometimes they ignore the benefit of the doubt rule. But I believe that the BVA clearly understands the benefit of the doubt rule and wants to apply it across the board. So that's my two cents on that. So before we get to the news and information, I do want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show. We welcome your views, your comments. Your number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. You know, if you've got a case that's pending before the BVA, or you've just been before the BVA and you've got some experiences that you want to share, please call us, and I'd love to hear someone else's perspective on their experience. So again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. And one final note on that: you know, when you get before the Board of Veteran Appeals, you know, you're not going to be, you know. Your lawyer is going to ask you the questions, and if the lawyer has been prepared, then that should be really the end of it. The judge may have a couple of questions here or there, but the judge isn't there to interrogate you, cross-examine you. He may just ask you a couple of questions because he needs to iron out a couple of issues when it comes to interpreting the diagnostic code as it applies to your disability. So it's not an interrogation process, so you should not be scared of the process. And you should welcome the process. Okay, David, I think I've said enough on that topic, and we can always go back to it later in the show if we want. Back to you.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for sharing your insight. I know you've been handling just an incredible number of board hearings, and as you mentioned, this COVID pandemic has really provided the opportunity for the VA to maximize the use of virtual, you know, teleconferencing, of hearings, as you described, you know, just from people's own personal computers, or even I had a hearing a few months back where I was on my computer, and the veteran, who did not have a computer but he had a smartphone, was sitting in his RV on his smartphone. So it's the technology is amazing, and I'm glad they're making the best of it because it certainly, prevents veterans from having to wait. Who knows how long it will be before regional offices resume their video hearings, and it's a lot more convenient if people can just have the hearings from their homes rather than having to travel to, let's say, if they're in Florida, from any part of Florida to the St. Petersburg regional office, which we all know very inconvenient for most veterans. Anyway, yeah, let's touch on if we have more time in the show.
You know, just one final thing on that. You know, the judge on Friday, Judge Francis, asked me, he said, you know, when things eventually do open up, and he doesn't think it's going to be for quite a while, he asked, he said, do you think you'd go back to St. Pete, you know, to do the hearings there? And I said, you know, Judge, unless there's a reason for me to, I don't know why I would. I said, you know, this works so well.
I would hope they would not take away this virtual option. Why, you know, it would be insane for the VA. It would be just really cruel to the veterans to do that, because as you and I know, Florida is a large state geographically. Unless they live close to the Tampa-St. Petersburg area, a lot of them have to travel, spend the night in a hotel. They have to travel the day before, you know, and it's stress of having to drive. Yeah, so why would anyone? Because all they're offering anyway now, it's my understanding under the Modernization Act and the way the BVA is just their own rules, is that the most you get out of the regional office of going to the regional office is another video conference, except you're using the big screen TV, you know, as the monitor instead of your own computer. So I think it would be insane for the VA to take away that option. Now it's worked so well.
You know, David, I don't think they will. And the reason being is they started doing these virtual hearings before COVID.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
It was like a godsend that they implemented this system that we've been kind of asking them to do for a while.
Right.
And then they finally did it, and it was in place for 8 months to maybe a year.
You're right. Yeah,
And then COVID hit. So it was like it was godsend. Imagine if they didn't have it in place, and then you'd had COVID hit, and now they're shutting down all those facilities. How would they have conducted these hearings?
Yeah, well,
it would have been a related note.
It'll be interesting to see, though. We get all these hearings done. How long is going to take them to actually make the decision? Because some veterans have the misconception that the judges are going to have a hearing. The judges are making a decision at the hearing. Well, we know that never happens. I mean, maybe very rarely the judge might tip his or her hand about kind of how they might decide it on some issues, but that seems to be the exception. But now, you know, I don't know. I have a number of cases on appeal, and one of them is a direct review case where we decided it would be kind of pointless and not necessary to have a hearing because we had a strong written package of evidence. So we went with that was already in the system. So we went with the direct review, and by the BVA's, the Board of Veterans Appeals' own information, you know, their time standard, their goal, in other words, it's not a guarantee, but their goal is to try to have decisions on direct review cases within 1 year of when the appeal is filed. And in this particular veteran's case, it's been from last July until now, which is about 9 months. And so we were just checking in with the BVA saying, you know, because I had sent in several letters checking and some requests. And they replied, basically, you know, we'll get to it in the order that was received. And with no guarantee, although they did, when the veteran logged on through the e-benefits, it said, you know, your case is there are like 66,000 cases ahead of yours, with no estimate of how long they were going to take to get through those. So my point being, I personally think that, you know, the new system under the Appeal Modernization Act happens to be working faster than the old system, in some cases much faster. But each case, you know, it's hard to predict, and they're still, with all these hearings, I'm just curious, you know, because they have to do the transcripts and beyond the 90 days waiting for additional evidence, I'm wondering, are we going to be waiting for a year before we get these decisions or what, you know? So it's probably pretty unpredictable. I had a hearing the year before that, and it was like a record decision after an actual hearing. And the decision was like 3 weeks after the hearing. And yet there are other cases where it's a year or longer. So any insight there, Rick, on how long they may be waiting?
On the time, I would say your analysis is pretty correct. I've had a couple of cases where the judge did expedite the decision in light of the situation of the veteran, the health reasons and stuff like that. But But as far as getting the case listed, I'm now dealing with four different coordinators, Florida, Alabama, up in the Northeast, Georgia. And I've gotten a nice rapport with them. You know, you got to keep these people happy. And they're calling me up and saying, you know, Mr. Hurley, if you have any cases in my region, let me know and I'll list it for you.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So in regard to getting them listed.
I listed for a hearing you're talking about. To get
listed for a hearing.
Yeah.
You know, so veterans, you know, if you're doing your own legwork and you see that, like David said, you're number 16,331 on the list, don't get depressed about that, because if you contact your representative, you contact David, you contact myself, it's very possible that we could get you to the front of the line.
The example, I wanted to clarify what I said. The case I was mentioning was one where the veteran chose the non-hearing lane, in other words, the direct review. So it wasn't like he was like 66,000 in line for a decision on a direct review, not waiting for a hearing. So there was no hearing. He's essentially waived a hearing for good reasons. But we're having to sit back and wait to see how long it actually takes them. Their time standard for direct review cases, as they've said themselves in writing, the BVA is 365 days. That's their goal, but it's no guarantee. And you know, we both have had hearings and non-hearing cases where they've had the decisions much faster, and there's always ways to advance on the docket. Either, you know, the one good thing the BVA is doing now as opposed to several years ago and longer was if the veteran hits the age 75 or older, the BVA, with computers, they're automatically identifying those veterans and advancing them on the docket without having to request it. But there are other categories like seriously ill or serious financial straits where you have to submit some documentation to get it advanced. But that's separate from what you're saying, Rick, which is, it's absolutely a great thing, like you describe, which you can get them docketed for a hearing. But then, again, my point is, so we get the hearing done, how quickly are they actually going to make the decision, or are they going to be making the decision not really based on the fact the hearing was done, but just the same point that they are in the regular lineup? That remains to be seen, I think.
You know, Dave, I had a situation with one veteran the other day, and the judge was very nice, but she was very robotic, and I'm not sure how new she was to the system, but she was very robotic and dotting her I's, crossing her T's, and she mentioned that she was unable to hear one of the claims because it was not ripe for her at that point to be able to make a decision, which is fine. And then she said to my client, you know, if you've got financial problems, Mr. So-and-so, or, you know, if you got health reasons, or, you know, she was using those reasons that we know can expedite a case, then, you know, I'm sure Mr. Hurley knows that he can request that your case get expedited. And my client's about to say something. I said, shh, don't say a word. I said, thank you, Judge, appreciate that. I'll discuss it with my client after this hearing. The hearing was over. 10 minutes later, I emailed my contact up at the BVA, and I said, hey, we got to list this claim. And I got a date for 2 weeks later.
Wow. That's strange.
I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, I wasn't going to say anything to the judge. Like, well, I'm not worried about that, Judge, because I've got my coordinator up there, and she'll list it for me.
Yeah. I'm still wondering, though,
that they're trying to move these cases. They really are. Oh, and Judge Francis said something interesting that I thought the legacy cases had kind of come to an end. You know, there was a period there where I was really resolving a lot of legacy cases with one of the regional coordinators in St. Pete, who's now retired. And that was like over a, like a 2-year period. We were knocking him out of the box, it seemed like, because his goal was to, and he, his job was to get rid of the legacy cases. Well, according to Judge Francis, they still have legacy cases pending. And he said to me, he said, you know, if there's a little slowdown on the AMA cases, it's because we've been told we've got to move these legacy cases. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So if you, you know, if you're looking through your files and you have a legacy case, you know, definitely get in touch with our Gallup there in D.C. And let her know, because according to Judge Francis, they are trying to move those.
Yeah, well, like I say, I think the other proof, and as far as how fast the BVA is going to actually move cases, will be how soon do they make decisions after the hearings. I had a hearing before a legacy case that was before the Appeals Management Act went into effect, and the hearing was granted just a few months after what was then the VA Form 9, the appeals of the BVA form, and yet it took about 2 years after the hearing to finally get a decision on the issues that were at the hearing. And, you know, there was nothing you could do about it, you know, and that, anyway, so we'll see how things develop. I think overall the Board of Veterans Appeals, is their processing has improved tremendously, and the virtual hearing thing is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I also appreciate the fact that, as you said earlier, Rick, these judges are, in most and hopefully all the cases, reminding people that, you know, any evidence that had been submitted between the decision being appealed, that it's being appealed, and the hearing, they can't consider it, so you have to basically resubmit it within the 90-day window. I think that's a good thing, because to me that's a really serious flaw. It's a trap in the law. It's a trap that people may fall into, and it's like, what's the point? If people wanted to continue sending things in just to be proactive, why not? Because it would actually make the system more efficient, because the judge could read that information before the hearing, you know, instead of saying only 90 days after. But any event, we'll see. All right, we got some other news tonight. And before I go to some information that I have courtesy of the Military Veterans Advocacy Organization, I do want to acknowledge the passing of Lauren Price, who was a co-founder and head of an organization, a great organization, which is called Veteran Warriors. Their website is veteran-warriors.org. Lauren Price, a Navy veteran, she passed away on March 30th after a fight with cancer. She was a veteran of serving in Iraq. She'd been our guest many times over the last 4 years to talk about the work of her organization, Veteran Warriors. She had tremendous expertise on many veteran issues, in particular those dealing with the toxic effects of the open-air burn pits, but also the VA's caregiver support program. And she testified before Congress, she's really an example of the impact that a single person can have. And her organization continues, and would certainly appreciate and benefit from any support that our listeners can give them. So go to their website. It's veteran-warriors.org. And in the upcoming weeks, we'll have a program that's dedicated to the work of Lauren Price and her organization, Veteran Warriors.
Isn't her cohort Holly?
Holly Farrell was a guest on our show last year. She's now the executive director, and Holly has tremendous expertise. And I've extended an invitation to her and others in the organization, so we'll see if they're able to. But you know, I'm sure they're going through, and Lauren's husband, Jim Price, himself a Navy career veteran, who's the president of Veteran Wars. It's a very tough time for them with Lauren's passing, and you know, we extend our condolences. So we'll have a show dedicated to the Veteran Wars in memory of Lauren Price in the near future. Another bit of major topic I want to talk about tonight is another of my personal favorite advocacy organizations for veterans issues, and that's Military Veterans Advocacy, MVA, and their website is militaryveteransadvocacy.org. John Wells, who's a nationally recognized lawyer, veterans advocate, and a retired Navy commander himself, has been a guest on our show many times over the past several years, and his organization is growing and flourishing. He always has an open invitation to be on our show, and I know, I'm sure he will be soon again. But meanwhile, I did not want to wait until his next appearance to keep our listeners updated, because Military Veterans Advocacy, their mission is several fold, basically. They provide training and education services for both military personnel and veterans, as well as their advocates, attorneys, veteran service organizations, et cetera, concerning the rights and benefits of veterans. So they provide training, education. They also litigate in federal court to protect and enhance the veteran benefits for military veterans and military members. And in addition to the litigation and education, another prong of their mission is legislative advocacy, you know, lobbying members of, educating members of Congress to protect and expand the rights and benefits of current and former members of the armed forces, and certainly to protect the constitutional rights of members of the service. And one of their great programs or projects that I want to highlight, and that's the point of where I'm going with this introduction, is the Military Veterans Advocacy Organization, MVA, has established a Bill of the Week project, because there's a lot of legislation before Congress. And with this program, MVA will highlight every week critical legislation that will benefit veterans. And if you go, if you want to track this, go to their website, militaryveteransadvocacy.org, and then on their homepage, you'll see a tab at the top for projects. Click on projects, and on the drop-down menu, it'll say Bill of the Week. And just today in an email, I'm on their email list, which you can subscribe to as well to stay current. And their Bill of the Week for this week is H.R. 2269, and the Senate counterpart to that, which is S-657. And these bills, which are proposed laws, would cover the issue of herbicide exposure, like Agent Orange, to other herbicides as well, in Thailand during the Vietnam War. These bills would modify the presumption of service connection for veterans who were exposed to herbicide agents while serving the armed forces in Thailand during the Vietnam era. And as a side note about the circumstances, you know, these herbicides, Agent Orange, were sprayed at a lot of these Air Force, U.S. military, particularly Air Force installations that were in Thailand, and they were used to defoliate, basically to kill the vegetation around the bases for security purposes. And the science behind it is that, you know, the rules were that they had to recognize that there was about a 500-meter wind drift buffer zone they needed to recognize when they were spraying, which meant that they'd spray this stuff and it could blow in the wind and affect people that were technically not in the area being sprayed. Makes sense, right? Well, the VA's refused to really acknowledge that concept. So they, so far, they've only recognized, you know, the effect on veterans that were close to the actual spraying areas, very close, typically to the perimeters. In any event, you can learn more. Go to Military Veterans Advocacy website and click on projects, and then Bill of the Week. And the great thing, and this is what I want to highlight, I know I've been talking a long time here, but what I want to highlight is Military Veterans Advocacy has made it very simple for you as a veteran or a family member to express your views on these bills, to contact your member of Congress. And as you know, you have one representative in the House of Representatives, and you have two U.S. senators in the U.S. Senate. On the Bill of the Week page, Military Veterans Advocacy has links to a website called actnow.io. You click on the link that they provide you. It could not be easier. Click on the link, and it will take you to a page with a proposed pre-written message to your representative in the House and your two U.S. senators. You have to type in your name with a zip code, so the system will automatically then identify who your member of Congress is, the House of Representatives, and your two U.S. senators. And you add your name and address, and you click the send button, and all in about 15 seconds, you've input your information, and now you've expressed a message to, three people in Congress. It's that simple. So there's no excuses for not doing it. In fact, if you're listening right now, open another tab on your computer and then go to that website, Military Veterans Advocacy .org, under projects, and then Bill of the Week, and you'll see. And that's just the bill that I just mentioned about herbicide exposure in Thailand is just one of many. Every week, MVA has highlighted one or more various bills that have been introduced in the current Congress that deal with the various issues that are important and really timely. And again, it could not be easier for you, and I've already done this myself. I've sent messages, and I know it works because within seconds of sending the messages through this website, I have gotten return acknowledgments from my U.S. senators that they have received them. It's not the substantive reply yet, but just an acknowledgement that the message went through. So the system is could not be easier. There's no excuse for not expressing your views and perhaps, for instance, asking your senators or your representative in the House to at least, to co-sponsor these bills, to, to fight for these issues. Now, before I go on this, I want to turn things over to Rick Hurley. Rick, your thoughts.
Well, no, I really don't have much to add. I think you're right on with that. You've done more of that than I have, and I applaud you for that.
It's a way to stay on top of these things because, and there's other ways too. We've talked about in past years on this show, how do you keep up with changes in the law? Well, you can go to two valuable sources, and with the Internet, it couldn't be easier. Go to veterans.house.gov and veterans.senate.gov, which are the websites for the two main congressional committees. That's where all the heavy lifting, that's where all the preparatory work is done. A bill is not going to become a law, certainly in this context, unless it's made it through the committee. So you go to those two committee websites, and you'll see proposed legislation, which includes the things that the Military Veterans Advocacy mentions, but those websites, the committee websites, will also have information such as when they're scheduling hearings on these bills. You can watch the live streaming hearings. You can download the presentation of various veteran groups, which you can use to get a lot of more information on all these topics. So for veterans and their families that want to keep up with legislation, what's going on in Congress, how it might affect their claims, for instance, because certainly a lot of these bills like the herbicide exposure and the burn pit things will have a direct effect on veterans' disability claims. There's other claims that deal with the health care issues, and there's a lot to it. I mean, just in the last 3 months or so since the beginning of this year, been a lot of legislation introduced. You may not hear about it a lot in the your nightly news media or even ordinary media, but it's there, and Military Veterans Advocacy is doing a great job, and they could not make it easier for veterans that want to keep track with this stuff to actually then, you know, you're like, you know, type in your personal information and click send, and you've just sent emails to your folks in Congress. All right. Now, if we have time, I'll come back to some of these issues, but I don't want to hog up a whole show here. Rick, let's go over to you, and I know you've got other news or other things you may
want. Yeah, we've got some more news here. The Department of Veteran Affairs, they're launching a national outreach effort during Sexual Assault Awareness Month to inform veterans of free counseling and treatment being offered at VA for mental and physical health conditions related to military sexual trauma, MST. VA uses the term MST to refer to sexual assault or sexual harassment experienced during military service. Veterans do not need to have a VA disability rating, have reported MST, or have other documentation of the experience to get this care. These services may also be available to veterans not eligible for other VA care. Sexual assault and military sexual trauma are real. The implications are serious, and the impacts are lasting, said VA Secretary Dennis McDonough. VA is here to support military sexual trauma survivors. We want you to know that you have a safe environment here at the VA, and our professionals stand ready to provide you the resources you require. While significant numbers of veterans of all genders and backgrounds may have experienced MST, many survivors feel alone, ashamed, or unable to ask for help. Veterans who have experienced MST and would like to learn more about VA support may call their nearest VA medical center or vet center and speak with MST coordinator or a health care provider. See the website at mentalhealth.va.gov for more information. Again, that's mentalhealth.va.gov /. For more information. And, you know, on that, you know, David, you and I both represent a number of men and women who are victims of MST. And it's really, it's tragic, and it is something that counseling absolutely is essential in order to be able to go forward. And, you know, and I say this because just dealing with all the clients that I've had who have been victims of MST, and I know the efforts that they are making to try to basically cope, you know. They don't forget it. They don't forget what happened to them, but they're just trying to cope, and counseling is really essential. So take advantage of the VA if they're offering that service. Again, it's mentalhealth.va.gov/. Back to you, David.
Well, thanks, Rick. Yeah, that's great information. In other news, this is courtesy of the Department of Veteran Affairs. They started implementing last month in March some steps to improve its post-traumatic stress disorder claims processing. We know that PTSD is a disability that affects many veterans, and it's a common issue on disability compensation claims. Well, during the next 6 months, the VA has said that they will provide training, guidance, and process updates to ensure the claims processors better understand evidence gathering and stressor verification requirements for PTSD claims. According to VA Acting Undersecretary for Benefits Thomas Murphy, and I quote, "The updated training for employees is being incorporated and implemented immediately. I want to ensure our programs consistently evaluate all veterans effectively and fairly," unquote. Now, the updated training about PTSD processing was developed partly in response to a VA Office of the Inspector General internal review of approximately 118,000 claims completed during fiscal year 2019 involving veterans' entitlement to service connection for PTSD. While most claims for service connection-related PTSD were accurately processed, the Office of Inspector General found that claims processors did not follow all the task-based procedures when deciding a claim. The OIG reviewed a statistical sample of 150 claims and determined the Veterans Benefits Administration, the VBA, claims processors inaccurately processed 24 of the 150 claims. So part of the VA's improvement is to assess the reorganization of procedural guidance to ensure claims processors make both accurate decisions and follow the required policies. This will include determining any necessary procedural manual changes for accurate processing of claims involving entitlement to veterans with service-connected PTSD. So those numbers, just that sample, where they found 24 of 150 claims had errors in them, I mean, it just confirms, Rick, what you and I see in helping veterans, which is the VA does make mistakes. They make mistakes sometimes in denying service connection. They make mistakes in underrating disabilities. So veterans need to be aware that they do have rights to appeal, and they need to talk to their advocate about it. Over to you, Rick.
Well, yeah, one of the things on that note, when it comes to the VA, and I've always maintained this, and it's my opinion, so take it for what it's worth. But having been in the civil side of the law, not that this is not the civil side, but it's different than what I was doing prior to doing VA work. You know, I was doing work with insurance companies. I was in-house counsel for insurance companies, and after years of representing veterans, I've always said that the playbook that the VA uses is very similar. I'm not going to say identical, but very similar to the playbook that the insurance companies use. And for those of you who are not veterans, who have not pursued a claim with the VA and seen the frustration there, think about your own experiences dealing with your insurance companies when you've had to file a claim for a leaky roof or flood damage or something, and think about all the hoops and the hurdles that you end up going through during the course of trying to get your claim satisfied. They usually start, you call your agent up, and almost right off the bat, the agent says, well, I need to review your policy, and I'll get back to you. And you're like, wait a second, you wrote the policy. What do you mean you need to review it? And so, just like a veteran, you're not eligible. It's not service connected. You don't have a diagnosis. Instead of being, hey, how can I help you? It's, well, you're not eligible. So that tends to be the attitude. That tends to be the attitude that throws the veteran for a loop, gets some veterans not to pursue it, and in turn, the VA using that attitude when it comes time to rate veterans. Yeah, they throw out a minimal rating, hope the veteran will be happy with that, see how many, let's say you take 10 veterans and 5 go ahead and appeal a 30% rating, the other 5 are satisfied with the 30, decide they don't want to appeal, they don't want to, quote-unquote, lose what they have or whatever other reason they don't pursue it, but they should. And as far as the VA is concerned, they've just hit a home run, because that 30 is now locked in until the veteran might want to file for an increase years down the road. And so the only one they're dealing with are the other 5. And those other 5 are going to pursue it, and some of they're probably going to get higher than 30, maybe up to 100. But from an accounting point of view, the VA, just like an insurance company, is ahead of the game because the other 5 did not pursue it. And that's the money that they save. That's the money sitting in reserves, and that's the money that's being saved, that's not being spent on a claimant or a veteran. So, again, that's my analysis of it, and I'll stand by it. Back to you, David.
Yeah, well, thanks, Rick. we've got some other news, and I know you have some news about the HUD, but before we do that, I want to make a reminder something that affects the Vietnam War veterans. We've mentioned it on some earlier shows this year, but it's important enough to repeat, and that is the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2021, which was signed this past December, added 3 new disabilities to the Agent Orange presumptive list for disability compensation under Title 38 U.S. Code Section 1116A2. And those 3 are Parkinsonism, which is different from Parkinson's disease, which is already on the list. But the new list includes Parkinsonism, bladder cancer, and hypothyroidism. then those three are additions to the long-standing list of cancers and other diseases on the Agent Orange presumptive list, which translates into that if a veteran, you know, served in Vietnam or was in the Blue Water Navy or can otherwise prove exposure to Agent Orange, then, well, if they're in the presumptive list, the VA will presume that if they get those diseases that it was service-connected. And then it's a question of how severe the disability is in order to rate it. But that's a big development, and we'll see. I mean, there are certainly efforts to expand that list further, but that's the latest. Over to you, Rick.
You know, they should, especially the bladder cancer, considering the military was the one who gave the veteran those cigarettes to begin with. With regard to the secretaries of the VA and HUD issued a joint statement recently on ending veteran homelessness. The following is from VA Secretary Dennis McDonough and HUD Secretary Marsha L. Fudge. April 12, 2021, the Department of Housing and Urban Development's 2020 Annual Homeless Assessment Report, AHAR, to Congress found that on a single night in January 2020, there were 37,252 veterans experiencing homelessness in America, an increase of 4.4% over 2019. This number does not account for the impact of COVID-19 pandemic, which has added to the nation's housing challenges, including among veterans. AHAR showed investments from Congress, along with strong collaboration between the Department of Veteran Affairs and Housing and Urban Development, brought about a 47% reduction in veteran homelessness between 2010 and 2016. However, a GAO report found that since 2016, progress towards ending veteran homelessness has stalled. We find this pattern deeply concerning. No veteran who has served this country, let alone more than 37,000 on a given night, should experience homelessness. We, the secretaries of VA and HUD, are aligning our efforts and joining forces to work towards ending veteran homelessness. We are mobilizing the strength of our two departments to do everything in our power to ensure every veteran has access to safe and stable housing. We have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to tackle this crisis. The American Rescue Plan included more than $10 billion in funding for individuals who are experiencing or at risk of experiencing homelessness. The American Jobs Plan would invest $213 billion to produce, preserve, and retrofit more than 2 million affordable homes. Our collaboration is the first step of a multi-phase whole-of-government effort that will ultimately help us end veteran homelessness. We will evaluate existing strategies, implement new approaches when necessary, and execute a plan to ensure we achieve tangible results that incorporate best practices, feedback, and lessons learned from veterans, advocacy groups, and other stakeholders. To fulfill this mission, we will make ending veteran homelessness a top priority. VA and HUD will prioritize this effort at the highest levels. Staff in both agencies will collaboratively develop a strategy to significantly reduce the number of veterans experiencing homelessness, as well as a strategy to ensure that no veteran experiences homelessness in the future. Secretaries will participate in listening sessions with stakeholder groups, including veterans with lived experiences. Information and materials gathered will be analyzed for use during quarterly meetings with homeless program staff from both departments to inform decisions about changes to policies and programs. We will develop targets, assets, progress, and hold our agencies accountable. Lead with an evidence-based housing-first approach. Evidence and fast progress on reducing veteran homelessness demonstrate the housing-first approach works. Together, our agencies will ensure target interventions such as HUD, VA, support housing, supportive services for veteran families, and grant and per diem help other veterans obtain stable housing as quickly as possible without barriers or preconditions. Reach underserved veterans. Reducing veteran homelessness will require new approaches to serving veterans for whom prior efforts may have fallen short. These include veterans with less than honorable discharge status, as well as veterans who are women, members of racial and ethnic minority groups, transgender and gender nonconforming, aging and or living in rural areas. We will ensure our interagency effort identifies and removes barriers to VA care and services so benefits are equally available among underserved veteran communities. We will ensure the delivery of quality supportive services. Supportive services are critical to helping veterans find and retain housing and to use it as a platform for achieving health, recovery, and economic success. Working diligently with federal and community stakeholders, will commit to identifying ways to ensure veterans have access to quality supportive health, mental health, and medical legal services, alongside employment and housing assistance, whether provided by VA or community partners. Increase the supply of and access to affordable housing. A significant obstacle to ending veteran homelessness is the lack of affordable housing, especially in many urban centers. We'll work jointly, including examining opportunities through the American Rescue Plan and the American Jobs Plan, to increase the supply of affordable housing and ensure veterans have access. Our agencies will do this by engaging landlords and affordable housing developers, supporting the use of federal programs to create and subsidize affordable housing, identifying ways to improve veteran access to these housing units, and supporting state and local collaboration to finance and create affordable housing. Working to end veteran homelessness requires a multi-agency effort coordinated through the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness. Together, we can enhance how we deliver services and provide opportunities to veterans to ensure we bring the full force of the federal government to end veteran homelessness. Sounds like a great plan.
A lot to it. I just hope, I know our show is Veteran News Hour, but just as an American, I would hope that governments, local, state, and federal, examine the homeless problem for all Americans, not just veterans. And if you look at there are a lot of reports, and it's well documented in film, you can find these on YouTube. There's a lot of major cities in the United States where there are tremendous homeless problems, and people living in tents out on public sidewalks and parks. It's just, it's a national disgrace. It should not be. I mean, last time I was in Washington, D.C., it was pre-COVID. It was August 15, and I was with some of my kids. We were walking through D.C., heading in the direction of the mall to go to some museums. We passed some of the parks, and there were people living in tents in the public parks. Now, it's a huge national disgrace that people are living, you know, it's not campground, but people, these obviously cannot help themselves, but they need to be out of tents, they need to be help to be placed in places where they can live safely and to address their serious problems that make them homeless, whether it's addiction problems, whether it's financial problems, mental problems, the whole gamut. You know, it's really a tremendous, it's a human tragedy, and it's, like I say, a national disgrace.
Hopefully. It's a national, you are right, it's a national
it's
disgrace.
A national disgrace, but there's some places in this country where it's far worse. And well, I don't want to single out cities, but Los Angeles, Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, you just go up and down the west coast of this country, and you can see they are the most, they have the most to be ashamed of as far as how they fail to take care of homeless Americans. But anyway, I'm getting a little bit off.
No, I know. And you can add Denver and Asheville to that list too. I mean, yeah. I was just in Asheville not too long ago, and I was just amazed in the park, beautiful parks, and it's basically a park for the homeless to live. And across the street were these beautiful, great restaurants. And so you had all these people going into these restaurants, spending hundreds of dollars at these really nice restaurants. And then across the street you had people who were homeless and couldn't afford to eat scraps. I mean, it was...
It's a national disgrace. The problem, these people need help. And whatever, all these literally billions of dollars that the governments are spending needs to be examined, because whoever is running these programs need to be fired for being incompetent, because they're not getting the job done. I think they just don't know how to run a program. But we're about out of time, Rick. So let's go into our coaching into care and closure, because we're down to our last minute here.
Okay. Yeah, the coaching into care. I want to remind veterans and their families about this important program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. This hour is our Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, VA's Coaching the Care is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call that number at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Well, thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of this show. Until then, have a great week and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.